They have published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern movement, from the Kennedy brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, ePelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At ePelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit ePelican.com. That website again, ePelican.com.
Dixie Outfitters is proud to be Southern and proud of our ancestors who fought and died in the war for Southern independence. We believe that various groups have distorted the real meaning of the Confederate flag for their own purposes, and we strive to feature the Confederate flag in the context of history, heritage, and pride in the Southern way of life. The Confederate battle flag represents all Southern, even Northern Confederates, regardless of race or religion, and is the symbol of less government, fewer taxes, and the right of the people to govern themselves. It is flown in memory and honor of our Confederate ancestors and veterans who willingly shed their blood for Southern independence. Dixie Outfitters offers an abundant variety of clothing and premium products reflecting our noble Southern heritage. Dixie Outfitters' collection includes dogs, deer, hunting, fishing, wildlife, and more. They can be placed on short and long sleeve tees, camouflage clothing, sweatshirts, bags, hats, jackets, denim, and many other items. Made in the South by Southerners for Southerners. Please contact us at www.dixieoutfitters.com for a free catalog or call 1-866-916-5866. That's 1-866-916-5866. Dixie Outfitters, products helping preserve our Southern heritage.
All right, folks, welcome to a live break here at Dixie Broadcasting. We're coming to you live tonight with another Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. As you, many of you know who are regular listeners here at Dixie Broadcasting, Pelican Publishing is probably the largest Southern publishing house in existence today out of Louisiana, and they are by far the most friendly publishing house in America today to pro-Southern heritage works that are being published today, and they are not politically correct in a lot of what they put out there, and we're very grateful to have Pelican Publishing as one of our sponsors here at Dixie Broadcasting. And so we bring you these Pelican Pages segments with authors of brand new books coming out from Pelican Publishing, and we've got one of those authors with us tonight. Before I introduce our guest tonight, I just want to mention a couple of things. First of all, is a reminder that we do have the Georgia Division Sons of Confederate Veterans reunion coming up this weekend in Metter, Georgia. So if you're a member of the Georgia Division, or if you live nearby and you want to come be a part of that, you can find out that information on the Georgia Division website. If you're not familiar with the Georgia Division website, just go to the main SCV website at www.scv.org, and you'll be able to find a link to the Georgia Division site for the information for this weekend. Also, this week is the five-year anniversary of Dixie Broadcasting, so the radio station has a birthday this month, and we're very pleased to announce that Dixie Broadcasting, after five short years of being in existence, is now rated in the top 5 to 10% of all internet radio broadcasts worldwide. Our current rating service ranks approximately 10,000 internet broadcasts worldwide, and Dixie Broadcasting is ranked number 35 out of over 10,000 broadcasts this month. And that, of course, is based on total listening hours. It's a very exact measurement of how many folks are listening and how long you listen. And, of course, all of that success is because of you, the listeners, here at Dixie Broadcasting. So we appreciate you being with us and making this a very successful 5 years of being in existence. And if anything, I think it just shows the appetite that Southern folks have to be able to hear something in which they can be proud of their own Southern history and Southern heritage. So thanks for listening to Dixie Broadcasting. And joining us with us on this Pelican Pages segment is Mr. Marshall Conyers. He is the author of a brand new book from Pelican entitled Amongst Immortals Raging. Gettysburg Third Day begins. And this is a story written in poetry form of the third day there at Gettysburg. And it goes into very detailed accounts of what the individuals were thinking during this epic third day at Gettysburg and the important role that it played not only in those individuals' lives but in the lives of two nations as well. It's a great account because it gives you not just that prose account with the facts and the figures that we all like to hear about from different battles and the results, but it actually delves into the emotional aspect, how it actually affected individuals' lives and what some of those key individuals may have actually been thinking on that third day there at Gettysburg. Marshall Conyers is an author of one book already before this, a children's book entitled How Many Feathers Does It Take to Make an Eagle Fly? And this children's story is about a blind boy who finds freedom through learning to read. And Marshall wrote this book, and it's my understanding that this book was actually read over the Voice of America and broadcast into the Soviet Union back in 1988. Marshall is a lifelong citizen of North Carolina. He was born in Wilson County, North Carolina, and resides today in Wilson, North Carolina. He is a graduate of Atlantic Christian College, which is now known as Barton College, and he has worked in the education field and some other things along the way, including the military. Marshall enjoys bicycling, collecting local artifacts from Native American civilization, and enjoys, Marshall, it says, taking long walks with your dogs, Pal and Spot. So I guess we'll make them radio stars tonight, Pal and Spot.
That's a good idea.
Well, Marshall, thanks for being on the broadcast with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Ray. I'm glad to be here, and anyway, it's always a pleasure to talk to folks like you, and I look forward to our discussion here.
Well, I can assure you that here on Dixie Broadcasting, first of all, we have a listenership that's pretty well versed in the war itself, and most of our folks enjoy history, and they are also a very friendly crowd to authors such as yourself. So you're among friends tonight, so just enjoy the time with us, and we're looking forward to hearing more about your book tonight during the program.
Well, I'm looking forward to telling you something about it, and also I would like to, of course, read some from it. I think the folks out there will enjoy hearing some of the poetry. It's prose poetry, and I have tried, in my own way, to get inside the minds of these men that were the major players on that third day, and also into the minds of some of the foot soldiers who had to make the attack. It's Amongst the Mortals Raging, Gettysburg's Third Day Begins is actually a story of duty and honor and faith and love that existed between these average soldiers, that the selfless kind of love that they felt for each other and even for their enemy too. And it had to be a story of faith, obviously, because I don't suspect that anyone in particular, in this day and time, could have made such an assault against those heights bristling with heavy Yankee guns if they didn't have a profound Christian faith. I think that was what ultimately spurred those men to make that attack, not just attention to duty, but a profound Christian faith. Otherwise, I don't think they could have done it.
Well, I think you're probably right, and we're looking forward to hearing you read a few selections from this. It's always interesting, in my opinion, to, especially with different types of poetry, to hear the author read certain selections, because it gives us a sense for the emotion and the feelings that you had as you were sitting down and penning the words. So we'll look forward to hearing that. Now, if you would, Marshall, I've given our folks a little bit of a biographical introduction. Is there anything else you want to add to tell us just a little bit about who Marshall Conyers is?
Well, I'm a rather conservative person in most ways. I was a head track and field coach in Bertie County Junior High School back when I taught. My teaching experience didn't last but a very short while. I was also assistant basketball coach. These were two sports that I played in high school. And I'm athletic, and I like to lift weights, and I like to ride my bicycle, you know, long distances out in the countryside. I feel like you can see more of the country by bicycle than you can on, you know, a fast-speeding car. I do kayaking. And, anyway, I'm in love with the outdoors quite a bit. I feel most at home when I am there wandering through the quiet solitude of an old-growth forest with my two dogs, Pal and Spot. And I reckon that's probably the real force in my life is, you know, contact with nature. And I feel like that as we, you know, I feel like as the things that God made are, you know, consistently being diminished and the things that man made are constantly on the upswing, we begin to lose some of our spiritual identity. And I think that's one thing a contact with the land does tend to breed in us is a sense of spirituality. And anyway, that's where my own comes from, contact with the land, I think.
Well, Marshall, I think for most of us who have lived and grown up here in the South, you know, that that's one of the things that makes the Southern people a distinct people is that we this land that we call home, this place of Dixie, is just, it's very much a part of who we are.
It is, and I grew up like every Southern boy. My father put a BB gun in my hands when I was 7 years old, and then a 410 when I was about 8, and taught me the rules of hunting, the rules of safety with a gun, and we went out quail hunting, you know, with dogs, and I fell in love with the land by doing those kind of things, and grew up as a fisherman, and I'm 60 years old now, and of course I got too tender-hearted to shoot anything a long time ago. I just sort of gave that up. I saw everything sort of being pushed back, and wildlife having to sort of retreat back into these little narrow nooks and crannies by our constant expansion. And so I just sort of gave up on all that. But that's where I learned, you know, like most Southern boys, to love the land was because I was out there hunting and fishing on it. And,
The politically correct crowd would say your dad probably warped you by putting a gun in your hand.
I tell you, you know, my daddy was a man of great honor and a good man. And, he was a captain in the Army in World War II. Spent a great deal of time in the South Pacific fighting for for this country. I'm proud to have grown up, you know, knowing how to shoot and knowing how to use a fishing pole, and I took that experience with me into the military and was a fairly good shot in my company in Louisiana when I was at Fort Pope. So anyway, those are things I don't apologize for a whole lot, and my father wasn't one that did so either. So we pretty much, you know, stand four square as who we are, and that's, you know, that's about the way I see that.
And you've certainly got a lot of beautiful rivers there in North Carolina to go kayaking down.
Oh, absolutely. You've got the Pamlico, you've got the Neuse, and the Roanoke, which is a wild, fast, deep river, and it's sort of, you know, it's still a lot of wilderness areas here. But, you know, they're being developed, and it's sort of sad in a way, but there's still some nice places to go, and a lot of blue sky and sunshine to be experienced.
Now, Marshall, tell us, how did you become interested in Southern things or in the war between the states in general?
Well, I have always, the first thing I ever wrote was a poem when I was teaching in Bertie County, teaching and coaching there. And I heard about the North Carolina Poetry Society's annual contest, and I wrote a Civil War poem called Counting Time. And it was about the blue and the gray. It was a salute to both sides. As I had told you, when it comes to valor, valor has no politics and it takes no sides. Valor is, you know, to me, valor, and it's to be honored, you know, in any man. And, I lost my train of thought. I've got wandering here. Ask me another question. I'm having a senior moment.
That's quite all right. I'm probably throwing the questions out there too fast.
No, that's all right. I just got, sometimes I get to rambling a little bit.
Now you've written this.
Oh, excuse me, Ray. I've got it back. It was the poem that I had done on the Civil War. I'm sorry. I anyway, I had written this poem on the Civil War, and I won a position in the North Carolina Poetry Society's annual contest. And that was the first thing that got me sort of interested. I was always interested in the Civil War because I had my ancestors were Confederate soldiers. So my great-grandfather was a lieutenant in the Confederacy. But anyway, that got me interested in looking into it more than, you know, in just a sort of casual way. And so anyway, that was my first venture into the literary world, and then years later I returned back to that same theme in this. So anyway, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Now, you've written this particular work in prose poetry form.
Right.
Marshall, for those of us who are not as literary as yourself, tell us exactly what is prose poetry, because the two seem to be opposite.
Well, it's a poetry that has a sync. It reads like reading a novel, and yet it has a sing-songish flow to it. It has a rhythm to it. And, of course, in my prose poetry, I throw in some rhymes at strategic places to emphasize certain thoughts. When I start reading some of this stuff, you will see what I'm talking about. It's sort of strategic places. I will have some rhymes to underscore the point I'm trying to make. But it primarily is a sing-songish flow kind of language.
And Marshall's book, Amongst Immortals Raging, you can find this while we're talking about the book by going to the Pelican website. Just go to www.epelican.com, and you'll find a tab at the top of the page that says Browse the website or Search the website, and you can either put in Marshall Conyers, who is the author, or you can put in the title of the book, Amongst Immortals Raging, and it'll pull this book up, and you can take a look at it while we're speaking. I think Pelican may even have a sale price available if you buy the book directly from them over the website there at epelican.com. One of the things that I think is very interesting about the prose poetry form you've chosen, Marshall, is the fact that it's a collection of 45 different poems in the work, and they're all written from a first-person perspective.
Right.
And I think what I'd like to do, if you would, is maybe share just one or two selections with us to kind of whet our appetite,
well,
and then we'll...
I've got three from the gray side and two from the blue side.
Well, why don't you give us two from the gray side to whet our appetite, and then
okay.
We'll take a break and come right back.
All right. Well, let me explain what's going on here. The book is divided into six sections. It begins with the gray. There are 20 poems dealing with the gray. Then you go to transition. There are two poems that go to transition. Then you go to the blue side, and there are 18 poems on the blue side. Then you go into retreat. There are two poems in retreat. Aftermath is the next section. There are two poems in aftermath. And in requiem, there's one poem in requiem, and that's a salute to both sides, to both blue and gray, because the average troops and most of the men that fall were, you know, pretty decent, honorable men. At least that's my estimation. And so I salute both sides in one final poem. But you begin with your title, Amongst Immortals Raging, and anyway, I have a little subtitle that needs to go next, but it's in a little slightly different location, and the subtitle is Of Blood and Honor, Death and Glory. Then the next page is the Gray Army of Northern Virginia, July 3rd, 1863. And then you have the first poem, General Robert E. Lee, standing just outside headquarters at 502 A.M. Then you go to one with Longstreet at 5:27 a.m. and Pickett at 5:31 a.m. And I was going to read some brief poetry here. Major General Isaac Trimble on his way to the latrines at 5:58 a.m. Trimble was one of the, you know, leaders of the attack along with Pettigrew and Pickett. Anyway, I'll read this two brief poems Major General Isaac Trimble first, and then Lieutenant General Richard Ewell second, and these are both from the Great Side.
Okay.
Okay, here goes. If not for Ewell's colossal stupidity, if not for his blind-eyed, blundering, strategic idiocy, damn him, we would hold the higher ground this day, be dug in even now, positioned there to strike them well, to deal out disproportionate death, rather than ill-disposed within this purgatory place from which we'll all too soon march up and out straight into raging Yankee hell. Please, if you are listening, forgive my blaspheming words, for I am very troubled in my soul. Me, poor Isaac Trimble, your faithful servant, a very religious man, yes, I truly am indeed, who dwells at length upon the opportunities missed upon that first most fateful day. Yes, I, your humble servant, who, by the lifelong devoutness of my Christian faith, do hereby once again reaffirm the power of that dreadful curse I previously laid on Dick Ewell's empty head. Damn him. Father, forgive me, please. Your heavenly pardon, I beg once more, for I have said it once again. Okay, then you go to Lieutenant General Richard Ewell, seated, loading his pistol, at 6:09 a.m. And here he is talking. I am the sole, the solitary architect of this hour all-encompassing and all too soon to come. I alone who spun this needless soldier's web, who fashioned it with brooding, now soon to drip with noble southern blood. Dick Ewell, long to be remembered for what I never did, who did not act when action called, who owned those heights for the simple taking, yet who froze, immobilized with indecision, chiseled to the very marrow of my bones. Poor Trimble begged, he pleaded, raged finally out at last. For God's sake, take that hill, he cried. I could not budge, glued there, rooted to the spot. And Trimble, beside himself, exasperated, cried out once again, I'll take it then, just give me a division. I could not speak. Give me a brigade, he pleaded. I could not speak. Give me a regiment, he roared straight out at last, and still I could not speak. Old Isaac Trimble, good soldier that he is, damns me roundly in his heart, I know. Yet if we win here on the day, all is well again. Lord, I beg of thee, please let us win here on the day. Anyway, those are two from the southern side.
That's tremendous.
What'd you say? I'm sorry.
I was just saying, that's tremendous, the way that you you capture the thoughts and the feelings that the men were going through that morning. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking tonight with Marshall Conyers, the author of a brand new book from Pelican Publishing entitled Amongst Immortals Raging. And you can visit the Pelican website and take a look at this book while we're talking to Marshall tonight. The Pelican website, again, is epelican.com. We're going to take a short break and come back in just a minute, and we'll talk some more to Marshall about the book and what led to the writing of the book itself, and actually hear a few more selections read from Marshall, the author of this brand-new book, Amongst Immortals Raging. Here now, folks, for a short break is Bobby Horton and his song My Southern Land, one of our most requested songs here at Dixie Broadcast.
On the crimson battlefield, southern land, my southern land, the victory's blade thy children wield, southern land, my southern land. Backward flies the baffled foe, in Vicksburg's front he learned to know, and dread a free man's fatal blow. Southern land, my southern land, proudly may thy forehead shine, southern land, my southern land, a diadem of stars is thine, southern land, my southern land. Dread a foeman Jackson see, a deathless fame from blemish free, bright as the sword he drew for thee, southern land, my southern land. Johnston, Beauregard, and Lee, southern land, my southern land, for forever bright, their name shall be Southern Land, my Southern Land. Enshrined in our hearts they dwell, to our brave boys their deeds we tell. The warrior's laurel fits them well. Southern Land, my Southern Land, would I could name thy leading graves. Southern Land, my Southern Land, even those who sleep in the martyrs' graves. Southern Land, my Southern Land, but lo, the thronging heroes come with gleaming blade and blood-dyed plume. 'Tis wealth that makes thy minstrel dumb. Southern Land, my Southern Land. For every tear thy daughter shed, Southern Land, my Southern Land, thy foe shall miss a minion dead. Southern Land, my Southern Land, for vengeance on the brutal throng, we draw the sword, we raise the song. For this we pray, for this we long. Southern Land, my Southern Land, what craven tongue dares whisper peace? Southern Land, my Southern Land, what voice would bid the war storm cease? Southern Land, my Southern Land, bid mercy from thy banners fly, be deaf to every suppliant cry, till crushed beneath thy feet they lie. Southern Land, my Southern Land. My Southern Land, sweet Southern Land.
You've seen them out there, the copycats. But the only place to find the real Legends of the Confederacy t-shirts is at Dixie Outfitters. Often imitated, often admired, Dixie Outfitters is the original apparel with the Confederate battle flag and all of your Southern heroes. Whether your favorite is Lee, Jackson, Davis, or Forrest, or a host of others, Dixie Outfitters Legends of the Confederacy has just the shirt to show off your Southern pride. Visit us online today at www.dixieoutfitters.com to see the entire line and to request our free color catalog. That's www.dixieoutfitters.com.
All right, welcome back to this Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting, and we are joined here tonight on this Pelican Pages segment with Marshall Conyers, who is the author of a brand new book from Pelican entitled Amongst Immortals Raging, Gettysburg's Third Day Begins. And this is a work that is written as a series of 45 poems connected together in prose poetry form. All of these poems together from different individuals' perspectives are written in first person. So you are able to sense and to feel exactly what these individuals may very well have been thinking and feeling and searching within themselves that very day on the third day of Gettysburg. Now, just before the break, Marshall, I know you gave us a couple of passages from the gray side. You want to follow that up with a couple of passages from those old dastardly Yankee side?
Yes, I have got a couple of poems here that are from the blue side, and they are, one of them is Winfield Hancock, Major General Winfield Hancock, and he is, this is as Pickett's division steps out to form just beyond the wood line at 3:03 p.m., and, these are his particular thoughts as he gazes down on what he sees. Praise be to God that I stand here in this glorious hour, and should I die upon this very day and so take wing to heaven's keep, at least I've lived to see such beauty on display. Were I not their dedicated enemy, I would cry out above the battle coming, above the conflict soon to break. Stop! Hold fire! We cannot harm these bravest men and their formations of sheer beauty, a full mile of them extending in line view, in perfect order moving, to beat of battle drums, to pace of battle flags all grandly purling, bright beneath the sun. The sight, God help me so, I love it. So clean with order, thrilling, the absolute beauty of it all. Commence firing, I bellow out so willing, while deep inside still thinking. With war, I could truly fall in love, if not for the necessity of killing. Okay, and that was at 3:03 p.m.
Mm.
And the next, I have Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, sort of as a chronicler of events to some degree. His regiment was being held in reserve on the third day after having taken a battering on the second day. But anyway, Colonel Chamberlain is on the heights, and he's sort of looking down and watching as Pickett's division begins its distant approach at 3:04 p.m. They are coming. Far below, the drum beats playing solemn where battle pennons wave. A glorious sight, their lines all drawn and closely ordered at least one full mile across. How many by their regimented thousands? I cannot truly say, except that they are coming now to deal us death this day. Yet why? Why do we do it? The killing question posed and now more duly raised. I ask it of both sides. What stirs the warrior's rage? Provokes the wrath in us, or is it wrath at all that clothes us here in blue, clads them down there in gray? Madness? No, I do not think so overall, though the killing can't be sane. Duty, honor, country, we're fond of quoting that as well. Except for causes so dissimilar, identically we're the same. Yanks and Rebs, twin brothers of the flesh who both love life, or so we tend to claim. Who pray fervently for God's protection when the end is fast approaching near. Yet, where dying is the issue, I wonder, does God take sides? I'll wager he does not. For killing and its sake alone, I have no explanation for mankind and what we do here on this day, except to say with one broad and sad defining breath, we are in love, yes, but not with life. Our dearest love is death. So here within this lofty place, duty calls me to a practiced soldier's pace, to walk along our waiting ranks, inspect them well. The sun burns down a glaring hell, where grips the reaper's bony hand to powder, shot, and shell, poised now to waste the foe in each of us, that foe who truly is ourselves. Anyway, that's the second poem from the Blue Side, and I think you mentioned you wanted me to read one from Retreat.
Yes, if you would. Hold that one, though. We'll set that one up for our listeners here in just a few minutes. Let me ask you, Marshall, at this point, what was it that actually inspired you to write Amongst Immortals Raging?
I'll tell you the honest truth, Ray. I went to the post office one day to mail some manuscripts, a couple of little children's book manuscripts, and the postman there asked me what I was mailing, and I said, they're manuscripts, and he says, are you a writer? And I said, well, I write at it. He said, well, I have a friend who taught me history in Williamson, North Carolina, and she's written a book, and I'd like to give you her phone number. You might want to talk to her. I said, well, that would be fine. So he gave me her phone number, and I proceeded to lose the number, and I called him back about a month later, and I had this little book called How Many Feathers Does It Take to Make an Eagle Fly that I self-published that I wanted to find a publisher for. So I called a postman back, and I said, well, let me have that lady's name again, and I'll give her a call, and maybe she can help me out. Well, I called the lady, and it was Mrs. Elizabeth Whitley Robertson, who had written a book called Weep Not for Me, Dear Mother, published by Pelican Publishing Company.
Mm-hmm.
And we became friends, and she sent me a copy of her book, and I read it and loved it. It was about a young Confederate soldier named Eli Landers, who was at Gettysburg and who later died of disease. And anyway, I read the book and rode up to Williamston, 60 miles away, a few days later. And I wrote, in the meantime, the last poem in Amongst Immortals Raging first, and the first poem in Amongst Immortals Raging second. Wrote up there, I wrote these poems in honor of the man that she had written her book about. And I took them up there and gave them to her, and she read my book, and anyway, we had a nice conversation, and came on back to Wilson, and I liked those two poems that I had done, and I filled in the gaps, and it turned into Amongst the Mortals Raging, and she gave me the name of Pelican Publishing Company, and I sent my work down there, and they liked it, and the rest is history. So it wasn't an actual inspiration so much as it was a series of most unusual events, as if there was indeed some kind of hand guiding me. And I wrote the work in 70 days.
Wow.
And it was as if I was merely taking dictation. I didn't have to think. It was already there.
Yeah.
Most unusual.
Well, then,
I almost think that sometimes that the veil between the spiritual and the material world does indeed lift, and through it step those people who want to make sure that when you write something, you don't get it wrong. And I think that's what happened here. I honestly believe there was some kind of spiritual link here, and my hand was guided in this thing. Anyway, that's pretty much how it happened.
That's amazing. By the way, the Eli P. Landers SCV camp is in the Atlanta area, and just a couple of years ago, myself, in conjunction with Dixie Broadcasting, we were actually invited to that camp for a special dedication they had for the Eli P. Landers camp and some of the preservation things they're doing there. So we have a little bit of connection to Eli P. Landers,
right,
too.
Right.
Tremendous.
Well, now, I don't know. This whole thing came about as a result of, you know, reading his letters, which Ms. Elizabeth Whitney Robertson put together in her book called Weep Not For Me, Dear Mother, which was a very good book published by Pelican.
And they actually presented me with a copy of her book.
Oh, really?
At that time.
Did
so
you
that's...
ever get to meet her? She's a very nice lady.
No, I don't believe I've ever met her herself, but I certainly have enjoyed the book, though. So that's interesting that we have that connection there.
Absolutely. That's exactly the connection that caused this all to come about. It came about as a result of her book.
That's amazing. Now, delving a little bit into the philosophical side of things here, Marshall, I know that you've mentioned that there are certain prime indicators of the health of any civilization, things that we can look to try to determine whether a civilization is in is flourishing or whether it's in a state of decline, and that these indicators kind of point to the health of our own civilization one way or the other. Can you tell us a little bit about those indicators and where you feel like we are today?
Well, Amongst the Mortals Raging is to some degree a portal. I wanted it to be a portal by way of which readers could step back through time and take a look at a period of time when a man's word meant precisely what it was supposed to mean. When you gave it, that was, you know, you didn't need a contract. When duty was unspoken, you didn't have to think about doing your duty, you just did it. And where honor was everything, you dishonored yourself and you had nothing. Where faith was what you lived by. And of course, you know, not everybody was honorable even then, but by and large there was a code of conduct that people lived by.
Mm-hmm.
And I have tried to recreate that in the pages of Amongst the Mortals Raging to give people a look-see at another time where, you know, a code did prevail, as opposed to the chaotic, mind-numbing, self-absorbed times in which we presently find ourselves. And those indicators that I was talking about, I look back at marriage, I look at crime, I look at drugs, I look at abortion. I take a look-see back to when I was just a kid in the 1950s. The families were all intact. Divorce was non-existent in this particular area of eastern North Carolina where I grew up. There was no crime. You didn't lock your doors and your windows at night. In fact, in the summertime, a lot of people would sleep on the front porch because it was hot. There was no such thing as drugs. Nobody even had even heard of marijuana around here. And, of course, abortion was non-existent. But these are just, you know, just four indicators of the health of a civilization. If you look at the civilization now that we find ourselves in, the marriage is you know, 50% of the couples divorce or better. Drugs are rampant. Crime is everywhere and unchecked. And abortion is, you know, completely out of control. And these are some indicators to me of the health of a civilization. But before you can correct anything at all, you have to be willing to admit there is a problem. And the problem with a lot of people is they think things are just fine. And, you know, I don't think so. And I can look at the pages of what I have written here in Amongst Immortals Raging and look at these men and compare the way I have portrayed them as, you know, in comparison to the times in which we find ourselves. And it's not a pleasant picture. I think the West is unfortunately in a state of decline, and I don't know how to reverse it or how we go about reversing it. I personally can't do it, and no one or 10 people can. But we have to admit there is a problem before we can begin, you know, making a cure.
Isn't it amazing how we live in an era where Hollywood oftentimes depicts our ancestors as being a little less civilized than we are today, when in reality it's probably exactly the opposite?
Well, I'll say this, that there are no new truths. All the great truths were discovered by our ancestors. They were put forth by our ancestors, and, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, and we have taken those great truths and promptly proceeded to forget them. And that's the problem with, you know, modern-day civilization. I think we, you know, we don't live by a set of rules anymore. And I also think that, you know, I think losing contact with the land is a prime indicator of, you know, the trouble we're in.
That's right. Now, in conjunction with that question, kind of as a follow-up, We're examining the thoughts and the feelings of men like Robert E. Lee, Longstreet, Pickett on the southern side, and Chamberlain and Winfield Hancock on the northern side. How do you think, Marshall, they would view our world today if they could do that?
I think these men, you know, even in the midst of battle, I think they would probably come together and they would react with horror. If they could, you know, see what has become of the land that they shed their blood over. And, you know, not just the gray, but the blue as well. These were men of honor, all blue and gray as far as I'm concerned. And, as I say once more, valor has no politics or takes no sides. I honor valor wherever you find it. And I think these men would be horrified if they could see the world, the 21st century that we live in. And, you know, I don't say this as a person who is has a radical agenda to push. I don't. I'm not a radical at all. I'm a conservative person, yes. But I say this as someone who has watched what I perceive as the West, you know, move into a state of decline. And I'm concerned about it because I want to see something left for future generations. I've got little nieces and nephews and grandnieces and nephews, and you know, I want to see something of the natural world left for them, and something of the, you know, the best of Western civilization left for them to pass on to their kids. And I don't see, you know, things moving in a positive direction.
I would have to concur with that. Folks, we're talking to Marshall Conyers, who is the author of Amongst Immortals Raging, Gettysburg's Third Day Begins, a new book out from Pelican Publishing. And I want to kind of set this final piece up that you're going to read for us, Marshall. Tell us a little bit about what's going on, where we're at in the narrative at this point, and then go ahead and read that passage, if you would.
Okay. We have gone through the gray section. You've gone through transition. And we have gone through the blue section, and now you come to retreat. And I've got two poems in retreat, one by Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, and then one by Lee. Lee's poem opens up, or actually, Lee's poem is a second in retreat. But anyway, he is, it's titled Lee, astride his... And let me say this about... of course, I don't have to say this for anybody. Robert E. Lee was best man this country ever produced, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think there was anybody else as even close. Anyway, this poem is titled Lee, Astride His Beloved Traveler, 4 o'clock p.m. Raining, the army dissolving grayly up ahead, trekking, weary through the falling wet, through the mist of rising time. I ride amongst the muddy creek of cannons grown, to sodden slogging steps of men, to mud's deep sucking pull on hooves. Chest hurts a lot, yet to cast no blame at all, except on me alone. But still, I fall to wondering, is there not in all of nature somewhere a creature who feeds upon itself, whose awful consumption is its own brief life and limb? Jackson, a strong stone wall, killed, consumed by our own men. Those Carolina boys, fiercer than 10,000 mountain lions, yet for the accident of a single errant bullet aimed, we'd have owned the higher ground and victory in these final hours of our days. But all such tiny incidents unrevealed until the moment finally turns, does the fate of nations oft depend. Traveler, my old beloved friend, I tell you truly, there is nothing more dismal than retreat. I wish this rain would end. And that's the end of that.
Marshall, I just have to tell you, I'm a former history teacher, and I've never been much for poetry. I'm just a cut and dried prose kind of fella. But I'll tell you, your passage you just read there to me does a better job of capturing what Robert E. Lee was probably thinking on that rainy afternoon, leaving the field of battle, than anything I've ever read before.
I appreciate that, Ray.
You know, I know we talked a little bit off the air about this, but I can just imagine Lee, he's right there in the midst of the entire army as they're leaving the field, and yet certainly because of the kind of man that he was, he must inwardly have been thinking,
absolutely.
It was all my fault.
Absolutely. And, you know, he had to have been thinking about Jackson, too. If Jackson had been there early on the first day, he would have seen it and gone for the high ground, and it would have made all the difference in the world. And anyway, so Lee had to be thinking these thoughts, and you know, I think he was experiencing some heart trouble. You know, I mentioned in this particular poem, chest hurts a lot. He's thinking that to himself. And anyway, he had to have been, there's nothing I don't think that can be. I have a description. Let me read this brief description real quickly from the Chamberlain poem about. Or would you like to hear the whole poem?
Whatever you'd like to do.
I'd like to do. This is the one that precedes Lee. Chamberlain on the heights as the Army of Northern Virginia begins its long march southward. And this, to me, sums up the emptiness of defeat and of retreat. This is taking place at 9 o'clock a.m. Chamberlain is thinking, thank God they leave. Once broken, now they go. Yes, defeated. Down there so very far below, their sounds all unmistakable by distance softly muffled, to creak of cannon moan, to tread of leaden feet. Gray legions stay marching, moving out now in retreat. To have fought so well, so nobly, what must they be feeling now? Perhaps that which we, who sit in victory's lofty seat, have known so very well ourselves, a terrible hollowness within, a great blood-swept howling darkness, tolling out the immeasurable horror of it all, of battle's doom remembered, nay, relived, of life and limb all wasted, of men torn puppet-like asunder, so uselessly expended. Defeat, as bitter, black as sin, bereft of son, stepchild with no human brothers, unloved, retreat declares itself alone, heartsick, the ultimate in all emptiness, the epitome of all leaving, toward emptiness they go, which is precisely why we should mass within the hour and strike them now a mortal killing blow. Anyway, that was pretty much the way I looked at defeat and retreat, the feelings that, you know, to the defeated, how they must be.
Well, Marshall, you coming from one history former history teacher to another former history teacher, I think you've done a marvelous job in helping us to be able to have a little bit of insight into probably the things that these individuals and many others that we haven't had time to cover tonight were actually feeling there on that third day at Gettysburg. We're talking to Marshall Conyers. He is the author of Amongst Immortals Raging, Gettysburg Third Day Begins. And this is a brand new book from Pelican Publishing, and you can look at it and get a little bit of a feel for what the book includes and even order the book online by going to epelican.com. And I guess before we get out of here, Marshall, I'd like to ask, are there any future works that you have already in the making?
Well, like we were talking about a little bit earlier, Ray, I've collected Indian or Native American, I call them red men, artifacts all my life around here in Wilson County, walking the wintry fields, the fallow fields, looking for arrowheads after rains, you know. And it was a very peaceful, wonderful hobby, and I have a huge collection. And anyway, I have done a work titled Of Earth and Ageless Spring, Sing, Noni Wetop Sing, Chronicles of a Vanished People. And it's 48 prose poems that, as seen through the eyes of the red man from 1492 to 2007. And I try to chronicle, you know, what happened to them, you know, in selected poems, and their love of the earth, which they were noble people in the sense that they did love the earth and respected it, and they were very spiritual people. But anyway, I'm hoping it currently sits down at Pelican. I'm hoping that they will like what I've done, and this could be a follow-up to the Amongst Immortals Raging. It's done in the same format, sort of a timeline format. It's 500 years of their extinction. And anyway, I did and still do think they had it right when it came to respect for the earth. And so I'm just waiting to, you know, to see what the decision with Pelican will be on that. I hope it'll be a positive one.
Well, we'll certainly be waiting to see what that decision is, too. And like many Southerners, I'm not only Confederate, I also have Cherokee in my background, too. I think there are a lot of us down here who'll be looking forward to this other book as well.
I wish that I could say that I have had some Cherokee or Navajo or anything in me, but I don't. But they were a noble people, and literally they have vanished from the earth. They are still here, but yet the way they move through the world with such spirituality and love of everything that God made, that feeling has gone. You know, it's sad. It sort of breaks my heart.
Well, we need to pick that back up with a little bit of that connection about what it means to be a Southerner anyway, and just continue to incorporate that in time immemorial in what it means to be a Southerner.
Absolutely.
Well, Marshall, I want to thank you very much for being with us tonight on the broadcast, and it's been a real joy having you here.
Well, Ray, I'll tell you something. I have really enjoyed speaking with you, and I hope the folks out there have enjoyed what little I've read. I tried to read it as best I could, and this has been really a nice interview.
Well, great. Well, we'll certainly have you back again, and when your new book is out and it's ready to go, well, you'll have to get in touch with us, and we'll just have you back on and hear some more about that book, too.
Well, thank you so much, Ray.
Yes, sir. Folks, you've been listening to another Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. We want to thank Pelican Publishing for being a sponsor of Dixie Broadcasting Radio. And if it was not for the likes of Pelican Publishing and Dixie Outfitters and others of our sponsors here, you would not be able to hear the broadcast. Or if you did, you'd have to pay in order to listen. So it's because of the sponsorships that we have that we're able to bring 24-hour-a-day programming to you 7 days a week here at Dixie Broadcasting, which is the only Southern Heritage radio station in the world. We hope you'll stay tuned. We've got a lot more music coming up for you later during the night tonight. and some special announcements coming up just in the next week or so here at Dixie Broadcasting as we celebrate 5 years being on the air here at Dixie Broadcasting. Thank you and good night.